Chapter 2, San Francisco, 1856. 81 years earlier. It was autumn 1856 in San Francisco. California had not yet been recognized as an official state of the Union, and emotions ran high as the issue of slavery threatened to tear the new country apart. Just a few years earlier, flakes of gold had been spotted by a sawmill near Sacramento. Although the discoverer had attempted to keep it secret, word spread quickly. Gold could be found in the waters that ran down from the Sierra Nevada mountain range. The population exploded as thousands of men flocked to the area in search of pay dirt. At the time, California was beyond the Wild West. Train tracks had not yet been laid, so the great expanse of the plains and deserts of America made it almost inaccessible by land. As a result, the first settlers to arrive in search of gold came from Hawaii, Latin America, even China, anywhere that could more easily reach the western coast by water. Less than a decade earlier, San Francisco was a tiny township in back of beyond. By that summer, its population had swelled to tens of thousands, a meteoric rise in disparate inhabitants which created a constellation of problems. Public services like firefighting or law and order were nearly non-existent. Land disputes, often inflamed by intense racial tensions, led to frequent acts of violence. The accused could be tried and hung by vigilante gangs within days. As a result, women and children were slow to arrive, and the area was chiefly inhabited by rough-and-tumble men seeking their fortune. Eventually, settlers from the eastern side of the country began to make their way westward across the hinterlands of America in greater number. The hardship of pioneer life promised an early death for many children. Those who survived the difficult journey to California would face other dangers once they arrived. Cholera, tuberculosis, and scarlet fever, dangers every nervous mother would have been familiar with. But the summer of 1856 marked a new arrival, unwelcome by all. Throughout San Francisco and extending beyond, children were being stricken down by an illness no one had ever seen before. Europeans had already experienced its horrors and labeled the disease with fitting names. The Spaniards called it garrotillo. A garrote is a rope or other ligature used in tortures or executions, employed with the specific purpose of strangling someone. Soldiers would occasionally use a garrote in place of a firearm to steal behind an enemy and silently kill them. The Italians called it morbus strangulatoris, a name for which no explanation is required. Previously, a fever and slight sore throat would not have been much cause for alarm. In 1856, it became clear to all that something terrible was happening. As a child progressed through what would have seemed a mild illness, white patches would begin to form on the back of their tongue. They would occasionally thicken to the point of looking like fur. The covering would spread to the throat, making eating and swallowing extremely painful. As the patches grew, their edges would emit a bloody pus. In later stages, this fluid might drain from the nose, a foreboding sign the infection had progressed into the child's nasal passages. With their glands swollen and their throat and windpipe restricted, eating and breathing became more and more difficult. In aggressive cases, the infection would cause inflammation in the heart or the nervous system, an event from which the healthiest patients would have difficulty surviving. The accumulation of liquid oozing from the sores would build up within the mucosal passages of the nose, throat, and lungs. As their body fought to heal, pieces of patches would slough off into their lungs, further complicating their recovery. With their minds fully intact, children's muscles would begin to twitch and they would claw at their bedclothes, searching for relief as they were slowly strangled to death. Although contagion wasn't clearly understood, it became obvious this new illness spread aggressively. Stories abounded of a single child's infection spreading to brothers and sisters within days, sometimes taking out entire families. Parents weren't immune from the infection, but given the larger openings of their airways and esophagus, were able to more easily sustain breathing and food intake, despite aggressive coverings over their tongues and throats. Doctors could offer little help. Like most illnesses of the 1800s and early 1900s, medical care probably killed more than it saved. Children sick with this new illness would have been administered mercury powder in massive amounts to inflame their intestines to the point all of its contents would be violently expelled. Emetics such as Ipecac would be given to force them to vomit. Blistering their neck with scalding hot irons or by applying caustic chemicals might be attempted to draw out the inflammation. A new technique showed promise, burning the white patches off with hydrochloric or muriatic acid. An intrepid doctor would soak a camel hair brush in one of these chemicals and singe the rough coverings of the tongue and throat in an attempt to stop their spread. The poor children, already suffering from immense pain, would no doubt have required a strong-willed adult to restrain them during this horrific procedure. Within the 1800s, it's difficult to separate the mortality of disease from the medical procedures that frequently accompanied them. Doctors debated over whether this epidemic was just a new form of scarlet fever, croup, or was in fact something entirely new. For parents who had safely made the perilous journey across the entire country, yet ended up losing children, for some their entire families, it was clear there had been a new arrival to California, an illness which spread like wildfire. The Spaniards called it garatillo, the Italians morbus strangulatoris. The Americans would call it diphtheria. In Greek, that translates approximately to leather or a rough covering. The choking white patches that coated the tongues and throats of those suffering were unmistakable to those who'd become familiar with their appearance. And what was more concerning, parents and doctors had nothing that could stop it.